Hello everyone and welcome to this lesson 7 in our course on immigration and the Nordic welfare state. So in this lesson we'll be talking about ethnic diversity in schools. So we turn to a more of a specific micro context within society and how integration, how schools affect the integration of students with immigrant background. And how schools might also affect integration at large in terms of creating a society where we have trust and relationships and friendships across ethnic and class lines. So there are 5 points on the agenda for this talk. First off, we'll talk about the philosophy of the common school and how we approach common schooling in the Nordic countries. We'll talk about the philosophy, the values, and the theory behind this way of arranging the school system. Then we'll after that we'll turn to talk about citizenship education in Denmark and Sweden, based on the text by me and my Swedish colleague Christian Fernandez. So in that text we analyze and discuss the differences between how citizenship education is approached in the Danish and Swedish common school and the different philosophies that seems to underlie those different approaches. After that, we'll turn towards discussing ethnic diversity in schools and how it affects the trust of the students, based on the text by Dinesen in the syllabus. And finally, we'll talk about how ethnic diversity in schools might affect the well-being of students with an immigrant background, based on the text by Jerni Al, which is a Swedish study. But first off, let's start out by talking about the common school and the philosophy behind the common school. So what is the common school? The idea behind it, at least in the way we do it here in the Nordic countries, is that it's a school for all children, a school that does not distinguish between class, race, ethnicity, culture, gender, sexuality, and so on, but provides all children, independently of these characteristics, with the same kind of high-quality education. So it provides all children the same level of high-quality education up until 15 years of age or so, up until 9th grade or 10th grade. So that is the basic model. We have the same school for all children. We don't have a very segregated school system where children from very wealthy families, for example, are able to attend schools that provides a higher quality of education because they are schools with more resources, for example. Of course, this is the ideology of the common school. We all know that in practice, we have neighborhoods that have socioeconomic compositions that are more advantages to provide high quality education in schools. So if you have neighborhoods where the families all have high education and good jobs, on average schools in those neighborhoods need fewer resources to provide high quality education because the children who attend those schools already have a lot of resources with them from their home. So in these kind of schools, if they receive the same amount of money per student, they are usually able to provide a higher quality of education. So this is just to say that this is the ideology, the philosophy, that all children ought to receive the same level of quality of education, but in reality we know that is not always the way things are, even in Denmark, Sweden or Norway. So why do we need a common school? So these are questions about why it is important that we provide all children with the same quality of education and provide them an environment where they meet across these different lines that are talked about, across class lines, ethnic lines, cultural lines, gender lines, and so on. So in terms of the quality of the education, the underlying value has to do with equality of opportunity. That the parents you are born to should not decide your opportunities to receive a good education and a good life with a well-paying job and all the different opportunities that that brings with it. So that is one reason, equality. But there are also other reasons having to do with other aspects of social cohesion, such as trust and solidarity. And that is that the sharing of certain values and sharing of a common national identity. So when we all go to the same kind of school, where we receive the same kind of education, and where we can meet students with wholly different backgrounds than ourselves, we increase the likelihood that we come to share the same values in society, that we share a sense of being all part of a larger national community that is sharing a national identity, and also increases the likelihood that we create solidarity and mutual respect across these lines in society, particular class and ethnic lines. So if we have a society where we, because we've been taught the same things in schools and we've had the same kind of school experiences, that we come to share the same values, the same liberal values, and take share in a similar national identity, that also creates social cohesion. It creates trust in society, it creates a willingness to sacrifice for others in society, that is solidarity. And as we talked about before, those values are important, at least thought to be very important, for having a stable and well-functioning welfare state with high degrees of redistribution, but also a well-functioning political system where even if we are on the losing side of political arguments and political decisions, that we accept them and follow the political decisions that are made, even though we disagree with them. So in order to have that kind of democratic stability, where we accept political decisions, we need to feel part of a common community, a common identity. At least that is the argument. Another aspect of a democratic stability, though, is that we at least a critical mass of citizens feel strongly about liberal values, and if they see politicians or other decision makers challenging core liberal values, trying to undermine them, that they, so to speak, rise up, protest and demonstrate, so that does not happen. So all to have that kind of citizenry, that where there are enough people who are willing to stand up to defend basic liberal values, it is also important that we have a common school that teach those values and teach their importance in an equal way to all. So that is the basic philosophy of why it is that we need a common school. We need to facilitate, we need to cultivate equality, liberal values, strong sense of national identity, solidarity, and mutual respect. And that is the best way to do that is to create the same school experience for all and provide them with the same high level of quality education. So what the common school provides is that it provides contact between groups, equal access to quality education, and a shared curriculum. Everyone is more or less taught the same things, taught that the same things are important, and taught the same taught the same knowledge. And when you have contact across groups, that is at least the theory that, or what is also often termed kind of a contact hypothesis in the context of trust research, is that if you have contact between groups, understanding of what other groups are like and acceptance of those groups are more likely to occur, you're more likely to create a sense of respect towards other groups, solidarity towards other groups. You trust them, you understand them, you know they're not a threat to you and your group. So contact is a basic mechanism that we become friends across groups, we talk with people across groups, we work with them, and so on. And all that can happen in a classroom and in a school. But of course, it's also important that we're taught the same things, that people read the same books, that they are taught about the same important events in history that have shaped a lot of ideas and notions about what is important and what is valuable and what we need to defend and why we need to defend certain things. So the whole idea that we have contact, we are taught the same things, we have equal access to the same education, creates all these values that we think are important. So that was a brief introduction to the kind of basic philosophy of the common school and why we have it in Denmark and Sweden. So and Norway, of course. Now let's turn to talk a bit about citizenship education in Denmark and Sweden, based on the text by me and Fernandez. So Denmark and Sweden are two countries committed to this way of approaching schooling as a common and comprehensive. But as we also talked about in relation to other aspects of policy and society, Denmark and Sweden do not tend to think alike when it comes to how to incorporate cultural diversity into society. And we see some of the same patterns in school policy. So national politicians in Denmark and Sweden, they tend to see quite differently in terms of how cultural diversity should affect how teachers teach and what they teach. And when we talk about citizenship education, we are mainly talking about subjects such as civics, history, religion, and Danish or Swedish. So if we take a bit of a historical look on citizenship education in Denmark and Sweden and how it has evolved, which the text also does, we see that in the early 1990s in Sweden, there was a focus on liberal values and solidarity as sort of a reaction to globalization. So the fear was that globalization of media and trade and so on would somehow undermine a strong sense of community and strong values in the population, because people would become fragmented in how they oriented themselves in the world. They would start orienting themselves towards very different kinds of media content and different kinds of sources of news and inspiration and ideas and so on. So it became an accepted idea among Swedish politicians that this required that the school became even more focused on making sure that students acquired liberal values and acquired a sense of solidarity with other people in society. And then later in the 90s, from the kind of mid-90s and onward, the idea that the approach became more pluralistic, more individualistic in the Swedish school system, and a strong focus on anti-discrimination and human rights came to dominate. And this was more a reaction to the increasing cultural diversity in society, and also what some politicians saw as a problematic backlash against this increase in cultural diversity, that is kind of increasing racism in society. So a strong focus on anti-discrimination and human rights became a focus in schools, and they become less concerned about cultivating a strong sense of nationhood, at least in the sense that all needed to take share in the same kind of Swedish identity. The idea became more that there were many ways to be Swedish, and we all could have each of their own ways. Each of us could have our own way of being Swedish and connecting to Swedish society. There were not one correct way of being Swedish. In Denmark, in the early 90s, there was a focus on good citizenship, also as a reaction to globalization. So some of the same concerns that we saw in Sweden. The focus became more on Danish culture and democracy as a life form. And with democracy as a life form, I mean the idea that being a good democratic citizen or really understanding democratic values also requires that you have them with you in all aspects of your life, not just when you enter politics, but also in your family, in schools, in your workplace, wherever. You need to think in a democratic manner. You need to treat democracy as a life form, something that influences how you lead your life in all different areas of society. So there was a focus on that, and a focus on creating a stronger bond to the Danish culture with the students. So there was a fear that globalization would kind of sever the bond to Danish culture among students, because they become more oriented towards, for example, American culture, sitcoms, music, and so on. In the late 90s, there was still a debate about good citizenship, what it means to be a good citizen. Democracy as a life form still dominated the debate, but there also started to be some discussion about a more pluralistic understanding of nationhood, that this might be a more correct way to think about nationhood, that we might have different ways of being Danish, so somewhat similar to some of the ideas that came to dominate Sweden. However, this was very short-lived, this debate, and really never took off. It was mostly based on some pamphlets by the then Minister of Education, Margrethe Vestager. Because with the new government in the early 2000s, the center-right government, the focus in the debate about citizenship and schools changed focus to liberal values, again democracy as a life form, but specifically the importance of Danish culture and history and how schools ought to teach that more and prioritize the teaching of Danish culture and history more to the extent that they had done it so far. And this was now not a reaction to globalization, but a reaction to the lack of integration among Muslims that, at least the perceived lack of integration among Muslims. So there was a fear that as the group of Muslims would become larger in society, illiberal notions and undemocratic ideas about what is good policy would come to dominate Danish politics, also more, but dominate society more as these groups, as these illiberal, undemocratic groups became larger in society. So that was at least the perceived fear that could be the consequence, and why specifically the center-right government decided to act upon it and encourage and require that schools focus more on Danish history and culture. So how do we see that in specifically in what is taught in schools? So in the text, we look into mother tongue instruction, the teaching of religion, and the teaching of history and civics. We start with mother tongue instruction. That was removed as a right in 2001 in Denmark. And indeed, originally, the idea with mother tongue instruction was that it was part of the state helping immigrants to prepare to return to the countries that they came from. So it was originally an idea about repatriation in Denmark. But it was removed in 2001, the right to mother tongue instruction, with the argument that the Danish school is a Danish school, a school where we talk Danish and we do not talk other languages. And there was quite a politicians and decision makers did not believe the instrumental argument that learning your mother tongue would also actually help you learn Danish better. That so there was kind of this instrumental argument for providing mother tongue instruction. But this instrumental argument is quite accepted in Sweden, that by teaching mother tongue instruction to students, they are also better equipped to learn Swedish. That is an accepted theory in Sweden. But it's also argued in Swedish politics that providing mother tongue instruction also provides kind of a multicultural recognition of ethnic groups in society, and thereby helps them to form a positive self-concept, self-esteem, to use another term. If we compare how religion is taught in Denmark and Sweden, we see that in Sweden there's a focus on comparative religion, so there's a focus on comparing religions to each other. There's a focus on creating understanding for different religious traditions and ethical reflection. The Christian Christianity is still prioritized somewhat in the way religion is taught in Sweden, but to no way in the same extent that it is dominates the Danish teaching of religion. So religion in Denmark has been argued to be a culture-carrying subject, and also argued to be connected to democracy. So the way that the democracy works in Denmark is somehow has a foundation in our Christian past, and something that is an important part of what Denmark is our Christian past, is the argument. So that for that reason, the teaching of Christianity becomes something that carries our culture and reproduces it in new generations. So we teach Christianity because it's a part of Danish culture, is the argument. And that is also why the teaching of religion is dominated by Christianity in the Danish school. So it's up until the seventh grade, no other religion is taught in Danish schools. At least that is what the official guidelines say. Teachers might do it differently, but officially Christianity is the only religion that is taught up until the seventh grade. And in fact, in Denmark, it is still called Christianity Studies. In Sweden, the subject is called religion, but in Denmark, it is called Christianity Studies, Kristendomskundskab, which emphasizes the importance put on Christianity how it's less important to learn about other religions and compare religions to each other. That is less the goal of having the subject Christianity studies. And also compared to Sweden, there are relatively many lessons in Christianity studies. So in Denmark, from Christianity studies is one of the few subjects that is taught from grade one throughout all the other grades up until grade nine. So throughout the whole school experience, all grades, Christianity studies is taught. If we then turn to the teaching of history and civics, in Sweden, the teaching of history has been downgraded and there has become more focus on the teaching of civics. And also history has a more international perspective. So the teaching of world history takes up more of the subject in Sweden compared to Denmark. In comparison, in Denmark, history has been upgraded with more lessons and actually also becoming a subject that students are examined in. So that is the opposite pattern than what we see in Sweden. Sweden, less focus on history, more focus on civics. In Denmark, there's more focus on history because governments have wanted to increase the emphasis put on the teaching of Danish culture and cultivating a strong national identity among the pupils based on the pupils learning the Danish culture, learning Danish history, important events in Danish history as kind of a foundation for creating a strong sense of shared national identity. That is also one of the reasons why history is also termed a culture-carrying subject, or has been termed. The term is not used much more, but during the 2000s, many changing ministers talked about history and religion as culture-carrying subjects, or Christianity studies as culture-carrying subjects. In Denmark, in the late 2000s, a history canon was also introduced, with the intent of creating a stronger sense of shared national identity. So with this history canon, it was mandated from the ministry what events all students must learn about in history. So there is a list of events that all students must be taught and must during class and discuss and become knowledgeable about, not with the intent of being able to criticize Danish history criticize it and then learn from what we did wrong in history, but with the intent of creating a shared resource with the intent of all students kind of learning the same history as a basis for creating this kind of same strong sense of national identity among them, creating the same sense of what it means to belong to Denmark, to be Danish, what it is that we have in common and share with each other. If we're all taught the same thing in school, the idea is that we create a stronger foundation for that to happen, for that strong shared national identity to occur and be reproduced in new generations. That is not a concern in Sweden, in no way to the same extent at least as it is in Denmark, and also why there's more focus on civics in Sweden and less focus on history. In the slides, for those of you who are looking at the video, I provided just some a little extra data here from a teacher questionnaire that was done in 2016 among Denmark teachers in Denmark, Sweden, and Norway, but also a whole bunch of other countries. But here, and there are around 1,000 teachers in Denmark and Norway, if I remember correctly, 2,000 in the Swedish survey. And all teachers were asked to choose among 10 topics, citizenship education topics, choose the three that they found most important to teach to students. And here we see some interesting differences between Denmark, Sweden, and Norway that seems to align somewhat with these different philosophies or ideas about what it is that the schools need to cultivate in their children. And specifically, one of the topics that the teachers could prioritize was the topic effective strategies to reduce racism. And if we look towards Sweden, we see that close to 40% of all teachers chose this topic as one of the three most important topics to teach the students. Whereas in Denmark, it was around, if I remember correctly, 6% of teachers who chose that topic. And Norway's in between with around 18% of teachers who chose that as one of the three most important topics. So you can study the slide where you can also see there are some differences between the kind of topics that were prioritized in three countries. Specifically, critical independent thinking was something that was highly prioritized in all three countries by the teachers. But this difference in terms of effective strategies to reduce racism, who chose that topic is important. We see that many teachers in Sweden choose that as important, but very few in Denmark does. And that seems to illustrate this focus on anti-discrimination and human rights, which at least in the political discourse in Sweden has been emphasized as very important. But that has not been the case in Denmark, where the emphasis has been much more on the Danish culture and history and creating kind of this a shared culture. The schools create a shared culture across ethnic lines, or facilitate the creation of it. They all can take part in the same Danish culture. It appears then that these differences in school policies also become reflected in the topics that teachers find important. So I've touched a bit here upon whether these differences between the citizenship education policy in Denmark and Sweden also reflect different philosophies of integration, but I won't say much about that anymore because I will save that for the exercise where we'll discuss that in the first part of the exercise. So we'll talk a bit more about that on Monday. Instead, let's turn to talk about ethnic diversity in schools and trust. So when we talked about the kind of philosophy behind the common school, one of the ideas was that if we have a common school where we have contact across ethnic lines, that it is more likely that we will also develop trust across ethnic lines, people who have different ethnic backgrounds nonetheless still trust each other because they've met each other in the context of the school system and have perhaps even created friendships across ethnic lines. But much research, although research not based on the school context, but on neighborhood studies and the like, tend to show a negative relationship between ethnic diversity and trust. Another theory that predicts the opposite outcome than the contact theory, which the philosophy of the common school is based on, is a conflict theory. And perhaps you've already heard about this in other parts of your study. But here the general idea is that if you have a context with much diversity, that instead of creating a positive contact leading to good outcomes in terms of inter-ethnic relations, it instead creates conflict and competition among groups. So because different ethnic groups tend to feel a strong sense of belonging to their particular group, if you have an environment with many different groups, they will tend to compete with each other, and it will turn to conflict instead of positive contact. And if it creates a conflict, it of course will lead to less trust and inter-ethnic relations that worsen. So these are kind of two basic theoretical ideas that often compete with each other in these kind of studies: conflict theory and contact theory. School studies that do not focus on trust, but focus on other aspects of inter-ethnic relations. So these kind of studies So there are a few school studies that focus on trust, but there are quite a few or more school studies that focus on inter-ethnic relations. For example, tolerance. So whether diversity in schools create more tolerant students, and whether it creates more friendships across ethnic lines. And these school studies tend to show a positive effect of diversity. But the text by Dinesen is a school study of diversity in schools on trust. So one of these studies there are quite few of, and therefore very interesting for us, but also very interesting for the wider literature on trust, because the school context is particularly well suited to study the relationship between diversity and trust. At least that's what Dinesen argues. He says that the school provides an arena for kind of meaningful, structured, long-term interaction between members of different ethnic groups. And it's an interaction that is unavoidable and repeated. Yeah, it's long-term, so it's repeatable. And it's very structured in the sense that students are asked to work together in groups, to be in the same classroom and receive the same kind of teaching, and they have to do it. They cannot avoid it. So in this sense, the school is a very good place to study the effects of contact between different ethnic groups, because we can be more sure that there actually is contact than if we have, for example, a neighborhood study. So the Dinesen study is a study of Danish schools. He measures diversity, not concentration. So he has a measure whereby the measures diversity. So how many different kind of groups there are in a classroom, and based on Danish register data, he knows the country origin of students or their parents, and based on the country origin, he can create a measure of how many different groups there are in a class. So if this score diversity, if it has a score of 1, which is the highest score, it would indicate that all of the children in a given school have a different ethnic background. So if it has a score of 1, all the children have a different ethnic background. If it has a score of 0, all children have the same ethnic background. For example, they are all majority natives. So this is the kind of measure that he uses. Often you will see a concentration measure used, which just measures, for example, the percentage of a school or classroom that have an immigrant background. But that is a different kind of measure. And what he attempts to explain or see what he wants to investigate is how much this kind of measure of diversity can explain of generalized trust and outgroup trust in these schools. So generalized trust or social trust, as it's also called, he measures in a kind of accepted way of doing it that most people do. So with three questions that most that is widely used. And outgroup trust, he measures as trust in the opposite group. So that is trust in native Danes for immigrant respondents and trust in immigrants for native Danish respondents. And in the study, he differentiates between the first and second generation immigrants, and he includes controls for socioeconomic background at both the individual and school levels. So he, and that is an important control to include, because many would argue if you did not include it that the diversity that you see in schools simply reflects. Or it's closely correlated with socioeconomic advantage. And the effect that you then might see has more to do with people coming from a worse socioeconomic background in context where there are also a high degree of diversity. But he controls for that at both the individual and school level. So what does the results say? So he finds that there is no effect on generalized trust of diversity in schools, neither on first generation nor second generation immigrants. When he turns to outgroup trust, he sees actually a small positive effect among majority natives, but no effect among first generation or second generation immigrants. So that tells us that there's so among immigrants or those with immigrant background, there is no effect of diversity on either kind of trust, but that among majority Danes, as they are in school contexts where there are more students with an immigrant background, they actually become more trusting of those with immigrant background. So it provides some support for the contact hypothesis, but and does not provide support for the conflict hypothesis, that diversity creates conflicts in schools. But of course, there is also not strong support for the contact hypothesis. So we don't see any effects among those with immigrant background. We only see a small effect among majority natives. So it's not strong support for that notion either. Perhaps more it is the case that it could be that it simply does not matter that much for trust. Other things are much more important for the kind of trust we develop than diversity in schools. Finally, let's talk about ethnic diversity in schools and well-being based on the study by Jan et al. From 2013. So schools with a large concentration of students have been problematized in the Danish national debates. I could have talked about this from the beginning, but I guess you've all heard about it. So that and some of the solutions that have been proposed are busing, that you simply close down schools in neighborhoods with a lot of residents with immigrant background, and then you bus the kids out to schools in the city. And in that way, you kind of reduce the concentration of students with an immigrant background in certain schools. That has been a solution that has been used because it is generally thought that it is problematic for the integration of immigrants if they attend schools that that have too many immigrants. Lately, we've also seen that discussion in terms of high schools, specifically the Langkær Gymnasium, the Langkær High School here in Aarhus, where there are quite many students with an immigrant background. has been discussed publicly as problematic recently. So this is something that Danish politicians are concerned about, and they are quite convinced that it is problematic to have many students with an immigrant background in schools. At least in terms of trust, it did not seem problematic. The question whether it is problematic in terms of well-being of students. Of course, it could also be problematic in other ways. So in terms of the grades they receive and the quality of education that they receive, perhaps their one concern is that specifically girls are more prone to social control if there are environments with a lot of other immigrants. So they are police each other in certain ways, and that is, of course, and those are wholly different concerns where that might also be true. So we're only here looking at some aspects of how ethnic diversity might affect students, so it is no way, because we don't find effect on trust, and as you will see, find a positive effect on well-being, that there are not problems with ethnic diversity in schools, but at least it does not appear problematic in these regards. So in theory, theoretically a good backing for the hypothesis that there are good psychological consequences for minority students to attend schools where there are many others like them. And that has to do with feeling marginalized in a certain context. So if you're just one or two or part of few students with an immigrant background in a school, you might feel more marginalized, you might feel more left out, you might feel a lot different than the other pupils, or at least let's say it's more likely that you will come to have these kind of feelings. Because there are so few others like you, so few others that you might reflect yourself in and develop strong relationships with. And it's just more likely that you feel different. Compared to a school where there are, let's say, 50 students with a similar background, ethnic background as yourself, in that kind of environment, it is more likely that these feelings do not develop and that you do not feel different and left out and marginalized. So this is a kind of the general theoretical idea for why we might find a positive effect of ethnic diversity in schools on well-being. And the paper on the syllabus is kind of the most comprehensive study we have of this basic theory. And it's a Swedish study which involves a bit more than 76,000 Swedish students from more than 1,300 different schools. And they look at a range of different outcome measures in terms of well-being. So there are some general well-being measures, and there are measures on moods and emotions, on peer relations, social acceptance, and school satisfaction. So it's very comprehensive in this regard in terms of the outcome measures they look at. And all the students were asked about their experiences and feelings the past week when they filled out the questionnaire. So even though it's very comprehensive, there's very many respondents, many schools participated, and the outcome measures are very impressive. One way you could criticize this study is that it does not include a lot of background controls. So control for socioeconomic background, and the controls that it does include are very unnuanced. So it does include controls for whether there are boys or girls, the family situation, in terms of whether they live with both parents or not. And at the school level, it controls for the municipality. So is the school in a large city or in a rural area? And it controls for the education level of the parents in the school. So if there are many parents in the school who have post-secondary education, or whether there are few, and there's just three categories that it controls for. So either schools are categorized as having 0 to 40% of parents with post-secondary education, between 41 to 60%, or more than 60%. So it's an attempt to control for the kind of socioeconomic composition of schools. But at an individual level, there is no control for the socioeconomic background of the students. And in terms of the concentration of schools, the study only distinguishes between three categories. So schools that have 0 to 10% of students with an immigrant background, schools who have between 11 to 50% of students with an immigrant background, and schools who have more than 50% of students with an immigrant background. So only three categories. And you could argue that this seems a bit unnuanced, and you could ask why they did not have perhaps more categories, because they clearly they could have created more fine-grained categories if they wanted to. So, but with that in mind, it's still a very interesting study and very impressive. And what the study finds is generally that immigrants who are in a school environment where there are above 50% or more students with immigrant background, they show quite higher degrees of well-being compared to students with immigrant background who are in schools with low levels of students with immigrant backgrounds, so schools who have up to 10% of students with an immigrant background. And it's especially among those students who have an African or Asian ethnic background. So, and specifically also the boys. You also see strong effects among the girls, but particularly among the boys, you see the strongest effects. And it's almost across all measures, actually, that you see this positive effect among those who are from African or Asian countries, or have parents from African or Asian countries. When they are in a context with more than 50% of students with immigrant background, they feel more satisfied in schools, they feel more accepted, they feel they have more positive peer relations, they have less depressive symptoms, higher degrees of psychological well-being, and higher degrees of well-being in general. So it's shows quite strong effects, have to say. They also ask about whether the students have been bullied during the past week. And here we also see that specifically those students who have a foreign-born with an Asian or African background, if they attend a school with 10 or less percent of students with immigrant background, they are much more likely to report that they have been bullied during the past week. So currently, I am in fact conducting a study in Denmark on the National Wellbeing Questionnaire, where we also look at how diversity in schools affects the school well-being of children with an immigrant background. And here, even though we do not have the same kind of impressive outcome measures, we are not able to reproduce these results, actually. So there we actually find if we use a concentration measure or a diversity measure as the one found in Dinesen, we find simply no effect of diversity or concentration on the school well-being of children with an immigrant background in Denmark. We do not find a negative effect nor a positive effect. We just don't find an effect, actually. And that is including almost 700,000 students in that analysis. So from fourth to ninth grade. So it's, in that sense, it's much more comprehensive than the Swedish one. We have better measures of concentration and diversity, but we do not have the same kind of impressive outcome measures. But with the data we have, we are not able to reproduce the results, actually. So with that final remark, I will give a brief summary here before presenting the exercise for Monday. So the philosophy of the common comprehensive school that that we have in the Nordic countries, the a main part of that philosophy behind that school, that approach to schooling, is that contact across class, gender, ethnic lines, and so on has a positive positive effect on identity, on solidarity, and the respects, and so on across these lines. Still, Denmark and Sweden have, on an ideological level, very different ideas about how you should incorporate cultural diversity in schools to facilitate this positive contact and the good outcomes that this positive contact have. In Denmark, the idea is that Danish culture should still dominate, and that it's important that every student across these different lines become knowledgeable about Danish culture and come to take part in it and share it. And that is this Danish culture that creates. So if we have positive contact in schools and let's say conditioned by the Danish culture, that in itself, that is what creates the positive effect of contact. And Sweden, they do not have the same, this idea does not dominate Swedish school politics, where there's much more focus on creating schools that incorporate cultural diversity and accommodate it, and helps those with a different ethnic background to feel that their cultural background also have a place in the school system. Then we turn to talk about the effect of diversity in schools on trust and well-being. Of course, we can have talked about a range of other measures that diversity could affect in the school, but these are some central phenomena, some central aspects that we often think that diversity affects. And the study by Dinesen, he showed there were no negative effects on social trust or outgroup trust of diversity in schools. And in fact, he found a small positive effect on outgroup trust among majority natives. And in the study by Jan, they found quite strong positive effects on students' well-being, specifically those with an Asian or African background, if they attended schools with a high concentration of students with an immigrant background. So, finally, last minute here, the group exercise. Let me introduce it to you. So there are two questions in the group exercise for this lesson. The first question relates to the first part of this lecture, where we talked about the differences between the Danish and Swedish school systems and the philosophies behind how they approach citizenship education. The second question is a much more open-ended, where I also want you to kind of reflect more independently on the kind of dilemmas that diversity poses to the way the common school operate in Denmark and Sweden for that matter. So I want you to try to use the syllabus, of course, but also try to think beyond it, or question the syllabus, or in any way, just try to think critically independently and reflect on what you've heard me say and what you've heard others say and what you've read. Okay, so the first question is, what is a public philosophy of integration? How and to what extent is Danish and Swedish citizenship education influenced by different philosophies? So, yes, you can find in the theory section in the text by me and Fernandez a discussion of what a public philosophy integration is, and also a discussion of whether Danish and Swedish citizenship education is influenced by different policies. So, of course, you can try to shortly recap what we say, but also try to criticize it a bit, perhaps, or think about the extent to which this philosophy that we sketch, these different national philosophies that we sketch, the extent to which they actually influence Danish and Swedish citizenship education, and whether or not there perhaps are some still some quite strong similarities in the Danish and Swedish policies that Danish and Swedish philosophies that creates also similarities in how we approach citizenship education. The second question is, what problems or dilemmas does the common school face when the goal is to integrate students with different cultural and religious backgrounds? So, you might come up with some ideas yourself about what dilemmas the diversity pose to the common school. So it might have to do with, will likely have to do with the school having to achieve different goals. They have different aims that come into conflict when faced with increasing cultural diversity. So for one example could be, is there a conflict between cultivating a strong sense of shared national identity and also making sure that students with an immigrant background feel a strong sense of well-being in schools? So that could be two kind of aims of the school, goals of the school that might come into conflict. Or do they? So think about it, whether there are some problems or dilemmas, what it is that we have to figure out in our school policies. All right. Thank you for now, and I will talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.